Let's see. The I've got the Old Testament reading for Pentecost 3, June the 21st, which is Proper 7. There's a really wonderful note at the bottom of the first page of the Series A, three-year lectionary, that has this thing about what happens when Easter, and therefore Pentecost, is really, really late, and you drop out the early proper things and pick up where you are in the dates. So Proper 7 and Pentecost 3 happen to match up this year. It's Job chapter 38, verses 1 through 11. In terms of some context, at the end of chapter 31, there's a very short sentence, the end of the words of Job, or something like that. Job's last appeal for a hearing with God concluded at the end of that chapter. And then, rather abruptly, it seems, we get this this character, Elihu, who had not been mentioned before, but apparently had been present, because very early on in his speech, he remarks about having listened to Job and listened to Job's friends, and he really rejects all of their arguments. And just, I guess, to make a long story short, he articulates in a sense his own view of the majesty, of the justice of God, and and then concludes, just sort of stops, and chapter 38, the part that we address today, has Yahweh appearing out of the storm or the whirlwind. So it's almost as if chapters 32 through 37 are almost like an interlude, because they have this Elihu speech or series of speeches. But now Job kind of gets what he thought he was after, all along, because now God appears and begins to speak to him. Okay, so chapter 38, beginning in verse 1, Vayaan Yahweh et Iyov min hasa'ara vayomar. Yahweh answered Job, Iyov, from the storm, and he said, just a couple of quick observations on this line. Notice that the word min is concluded with a medial nun, why exactly that happens doesn't seem to have any particular, have a lot of anything in terms of manuscript evidence. It just happens to be that way. The BHS editors say, read it, min, like with a final nun, as if that made a difference. Then the other is, notice that we're probably more accustomed to seeing the kal perfect, imperfect, while consecutive, third singular masculine of amar as vayomer, where the accent is moved forward. And here, this is in effect a pausal kind of form, where it's at the very end of the line, end of the verse, and so it's accented in what might be a more, I don't know, typical way, by having the accent at the end in the final syllable, by Yomar. I guess in a lot of cases I'm maybe more accustomed to seeing that that word occurring sort of at the beginning of some kind of line. It usually doesn't seem to happen quite so much in pause. But in this case, the thing is that from here on we have a Yahweh speech, so it probably makes some sense that way. Okay. Let's see, one other about the word sa'ara. There is a segalit form, sa'ar, which occurs, is the word in Jonah and elsewhere that refers to a storm. So maybe not a whole lot of difference. I double-checked, since some translations use whirlwind here in 38.1, to see whether that matched up with the words in 1 Kings 17, 19, with Elijah. But it doesn't. There it's ruach for wind and some other words and not this one. So no correspondence there. Okay, now we get into the Yahweh speech proper. Mizeh machshik etza b'milin b'li da'at. Try it sort of woodenly first. Who is this darkening, causing to be dark? It's a hifil participle, singular masculine, of chashak. Darkening, who darkens counsel or advice or testimony. And then bimilin, with words. This is from milah, which is from a root malal. What is maybe a little bit interesting about this is that the een ending is more Aramaic than Hebrew. I'm pretty sure. So a little bit unusual in that regard, but with words, with utterances. And then most English versions do with words, without wisdom, as if that is sort of a single phrase. But I think that the accent, the revia in Bimilin, actually sort of says that that's parallel to the Bili Da'at, without knowledge. So that it isn't just a matter of words that don't have knowledge, but it's kind of something along the lines of using a lot of words, but saying little, or having little to say. So that, I mean, in a way, it's that may be a subtle distinction, but it's not that the words themselves, and the words themselves may lack knowledge, but it's almost as if there's obviously been this whole conversation between Job and his friends that's led up to this point, and now we get to the place where a lot of chattering's been going on, but nothing much accomplished. Verse 3, Ezar na kegever chalatzeka va'esh alaka va'hodieni. Ezar, kal imperative of Azar, with that particle of entreaty, basically gird or equip. And in this case, it's going to be equip or gird your loins, the chalatzeka, and in between is the I guess sort of the standard or comparison for girding them up. It's like a man, and the root sort of gavar from gever here, gibor, another form, primarily adjectival, has to do with a strong man or a mighty man. So this is kind of like gird your loins like a manly man, not like a girly man. Okay, if you were acquainted with Saturday Night Live, I guess it was. And I will inquire of you. That's the va'esh alka. And now notice the hodieni actually is a hifil imperative singular masculine, plus the first singular common object suffix. If we just sort of set that out by the side, it would be something along the lines of make me know or inform me. In this setting, as part of the sentence, I'm more inclined to do it in a little bit different fashion, to say, you know, I will inquire or almost interrogate you, and you will, respond. You will, sort of give me information. And there's an emphasis on you're going to do it. It's not optional. Let's see. Verse 4. Efo hayitha bayosdi aretz haged im yadata bina. Efo, basically, where? Where were you? Hayatha, kal, perfect, second singular masculine of haya. And then the bayosdi, is Baith plus the infinitive construct of Yasad plus the first singular common pronominal suffix. So in my establishing earth, the earth, where were you when I established the earth? Hagath, Hifil, imperative of Nagath. And remember that the Hifil infix drops out with the singular masculine imperative. So sort of like at this point, it's the idea that Job is supposed to say something back to God, like, tell me. The me is implicit here. We could say so, something like that. Im yadata, if you know. And then bina, discernment or insight. Here seems to be almost adverbial. So, say so. You know, where were you? Say so. If you know, let's say, sort of certainly, or in a sense, exactly. If you know exactly, if you have a good answer to where you were when I founded the earth, now's the time to pronounce it. Verse 5, Misam Mamadek Deha Ki Teda. O Minata Aleha Kau. Misam, who set, Kal, and Bible Works parses it as perfect third singular masculine. Of course, it's entirely ambiguous as to whether it's that or the participle. I guess in parallel with the preceding one, it would be perfect. Who set? And notice that the pronominal suffix on mimadeha is the third singular feminine suffix, which shows that its referent is eretz, earth, which is a feminine noun. So who set her, its, measurements, if you know. I'm using ki there as more if you, rather than because or that or something like that. O is or, who stretched out, nata, like stretch out or pitch a tent, who stretched out upon her, upon it, a line. Seems to me that there are two ways of looking at the measuring of the earth, so to speak. In the first case, who set, who established its measure or measurements, which is to say, in a sense, who decided, as it were, how big it was going to be, so sort of the design part of things. But then the other part of it is then who has stretched out a line actually to determine what its size is. And of course science is doing all kinds of things to try to calculate that today. But it's sort of on either side, who sort of had some concept of measure up front that that would be sort of the paradigm or the plan according to which Earth would be built, or alternatively, who has been in a position once the Earth has established it to determine its size or measure. Verse 6, Alma Udaneha Hotba'u O mi yara evan pinatha. Let's see. Alma, sort of upon what, and again, a third singular feminine pronominal suffix on the ud-neem. It's pillars or pedestals. And then we have a hafal. Hafal perfect, third plural common of tava. In the hafal, it would be who were these things caused to be sunk down, kind of like driving pilings or something like that. Whatever it is that someone might think in terms of, well, how is the earth propped up in the in the middle of the universe? That's the kind of question that's posed there. And you can sort of see different sort of cosmology, I suppose, from contemporary science, where we know that we orbit around the sun and stuff like that. One other kind of interesting thing about this is to notice at least an affinity in spelling between the seglet, Eden, Aleph, Daleth, Nun, and the noun Adon, master. There is at least some suggestion by that of how what it is to be a lord is does have to do with governance, and we think of that as being something that is from above. At the same time, there's the element that there's a kind of lordliness, I suppose, we would say, that operates in support of, holds everything up and holds everything together. And some of the sort of consistence language about Christ as the one or of God on whom creation rests and finds its consistence and holds things together is the kind of lordliness there. So on what were its pillars or pedestals sunk down? What are its roots at bottom? Or again, that particle O. Yara can be sort of to cast or throw. In this case, I think it's more a matter of setting a stone of its corner. So who set the earth's cornerstone? Who sort of put the first piece in place for the founding of heaven and earth? Baran Yachad Kochve Boker Va Yariu Kol B'nei Elohim. That first Baran is again Baith plus an infinitive construct, this time of a root Ranan, which is to shout or cry, sometimes for joy, other times in just a loud noise kind of thing. So it's in the crying out sort of or as one, okay, Yachad, stars of morning. So when the stars of the morning called out or shouted out together as one, and all the sons of God sort of cried out. The root resh, yod, ayin, a hollow root, and parallel with Ran or Ranan. The business of the sons of God harks back to chapter 1, when in the opening scene in the divine throne room, Yahweh is on his throne, and it says that the sons of God came to present themselves before him, and HaShatan was with them. So it's potentially that these would be the angels in that regard, as opposed to human beings at this point. Even the we would call them primordial, primordial beings from the period before the flood. In the age of the Nephilim and stuff like that. Verse 8, Vayased bid latayim yam bechiko merechem yetze. A little bit of awkward syntax here. And this I would seems to continue the the verb chain that would have been part of the like the me psalm in verse 5. Who did thus and such. In this case, covered the root here is, it was Yasek, not Yased, Yavah Yasek, from Sakach, Samet, Samek, Kaf, Kaf, covered with doors, Delet, and here it's a dual form with a pair, in a sense, with a pair of doors, the sea. The sea actually is the object here. Who, and we'll sort of get a better view of the overall picture as we go along. The idea that what is happening is limits are being imposed on the sea. Bechecho, and here the another baith plus infinitive construct, this time plus a third singular masculine pronominal suffix, which refers to yam, it, the sea. In its bursting forth from the womb, or when it burst forth, Mayrechem, from the womb, in its bursting forth. And notice there, again, Revia, the dark little diamond, is a disjunctive accent, so it sets this word by itself, and then the last two words, Mayrechem Yetze, are a phrase. So, shielded it the sea with doors, when it burst out, sort of, and erupted, so to speak, it came forth from the womb. So, in whether this has to do with this would seem to be even before the notion of a flood. This is talking about the business of dividing the sea from the dry land and stuff like that from Genesis 1. Verse 9, Basumi anan levusho va'arafel chatulatho. When I, now God takes direct responsibility, when I set cloud its clothing, lavush, clothing, its, again the seas, when I made cloud its clothing, and thick darkness of Raphael, parallel with Anan, the two words occur with some regularity together, chatulatho, a swaddling band, and even the ESV uses swaddling band. It's kind of like not much imagination beyond that particular concept or description or definition of what's involved. Again, something that is suggested as some kind of covering relative to the sea that, in a sense, dampens it, puts a damper on it. At any rate, God takes responsibility for that. Va'eshbor, and I broke upon it, chuki, my, chok, in Torah-type context, refers to statute. It's one of the Torah words alongside mishpat and mitzvah and so forth. Here, it's more a matter of a boundary, something that defines or marks a limit. So I broke upon it or against it my limit, which is the notion of breaking at this point. One thing that occurred to me was sort of like on the order of breaking a horse, where in breaking it, you sort of bring it under control. He brings the sea under control by setting his boundary. Va'asim bariach u'delatayim. and I set, again, form of seam, a bar and doors. A bar as in, some sort of a device that imposes control, and doors as dividing or separating things out. And then verse 11, Va'omar, and I said, imperfect, vowel consecutive, first singular common, ad po, up to here, tavo, you will come, velo thosif, and you will not add, which is to say, this is somewhat an example of enditis, and you won't. And thus, it's sort of thus far and no farther. Ufo yashith bigaon galeka. This one is it's sort of and here will set or put. In the majesty of your waves. And in parallel with the first half of that verse, what it seems to be, this is still part of the pronouncement of Yahweh. It's that, the first one is, up to here you will come, and you will not continue to come. Now it is reinforcing that by saying, here will set, or almost be set, in the majesty, the gaon, greatness or magnitude of your waves, which again is another drawing a boundary, establishing a limit for the sea. Interesting kind of picture as to Yahweh's might over against creation at this point. It seems like it's a good reading for a sermon about creation stewardship, which would emphasize the ownership of God. There is no overt gospel. There's nothing about sin, so nothing about redemption from sin. We might even say that implicit gospel is hard to find, except that if one is concerned about the ability of God to redeem, then it seems to me that proof of that ability rests in the knowledge, the assurance that God is the creator. After all, that is the pattern of Torah. Creation and the calling of a people in Genesis, establishing through Abraham and the patriarchs, the people of God, and subsequent to that, in Exodus and the balance of Torah, the redemption and deliverance of the created, called people. There also seems to be implicit in words like Eitzah and Da'at and even Binah in verse 4, counsel and knowledge and insight and so forth, maybe an anticipation of Paul's argument that contrasts the wisdom of God and the wisdom of man with the foolishness of God, by which Paul will assert in actuality the surpassing wisdom of God. That if the foolishness of God is wiser than the wisdom of man, then how much more wise is the ultimate wisdom of God? The fact that he has established the earth and everything that is in it. There's a kind of, in that respect, a kind of natural law element, or certainly a creation element, and that is the backdrop, that if God is the one who has created, then he surely is able to redeem those whom he has created. Any questions about the kind of the translation of the text or issues there?